right. Good morning, everybody. Today is Tuesday, March 3rd, 2015. And this is Before the First Cup with Jules here on UCY.TV. Happy Tuesday. It's 15 degrees here today, so it's great. We still haven't broken freezing, but I did see on the weather last night that it appears they are predicting that we will be above freezing 5 of the next 7 days. So that is a blessing, but a curse, because with 5 feet of snow, the first time above freezing in months on end probably is not going to work out too well for most of the Northeast. We found leak number two yesterday. One in the kitchen, now one in the living room. I had to send some poor, unfortunate individual up onto the roof yesterday, and literally underneath the snow that was scraped already before, there has to be almost a foot of ice. So this is not good. Not a good winter at all. I am so, so, so ready for spring. So where do we start today? Yesterday, Yesterday, I talked about net neutrality and my take on net neutrality, what I thought was going on. I after the show, had done a little additional digging. As I had said, I never saw the original footage from the hearing of Bill Gates for that antitrust lawsuit with Netscape against Microsoft for Internet Explorer browser being integrated into the operating system, if you remember that. That started back, I thought it was in 95, but it was in 1998. And then in 2001 is when they came up with the agreement. They came to an agreement. And a few of the things that came out of the final video that I watched of Mr. Bill Gates discussing the agreement that they came to after a second judge had knocked down the first judge's ruling was that, well, first of all, let me back up here. They knocked down the first judge's ruling because the judge was found to be biased, they said. And there had been some statement, and I don't know if I remember this. This was so long ago, but maybe I do. There had been a statement by the first judge about Bill Gates being like Napoleon. So it was kind of funny, at least if you've been watching Bill Gates for many years, he most certainly doesn't look like Napoleon, but he does have some pretty ruthless business practices. But when Bill came out and gave his little talk about what was going on, and thanks to everyone and all the workers and everyone who stuck by them and all the businesses, and this is what we've been working on. You know, I always said that when Gates came out of all that, you could just see it on his face, that he'd sold out, that he bent over, that he gave him the keys, that he opened the back door after he had infiltrated every desktop just about on the planet. Well, I found the money shot. He actually states that while all that was going on, they were working on this thing and that thing. And what's very interesting is what came out right at that time, they were just getting ready to launch it, was Windows XP. Now, if you remember, just as all this draconian internet law is getting ready to drop down on us with regulation and government takeover and cybersecurity business orders and Microsoft Cyber Patrol and working together with all the tech companies and all the businesses to be part of one big security happy family, is that right before that all happened, Microsoft had announced the end of support for Windows XP, and the news came out that 95% of all banks ran XP still, and then they had that massive hack that caused Obama to jerk his knee, hit the bottom of the table, and ink an executive order. Now they're going to have a security clearinghouse, and we're going to bring all the businesses into the fold. Guys, it's brilliant. I do think they handed him the keys. I think that was Gates's payoff for all that. So anyway, I don't want to spend another day talking about net neutrality. I could not find that 300-plus page document, so it doesn't appear that it's been released yet to the public, or at least in a searchable format to be able to locate it. So I'm trying to decide now what we're going to do today. And one of my feeds that I've been keeping that's very special to me, there's no, the only two subscribers are me and Mr. Turbeville. And it was only a page for me to share stuff that I want to make sure I get to tomorrow. But at one point I've been doing some testing on that page with an automated sharer from the Pigmine feed, and it stopped working mysteriously a while ago. Well, it appears it started working again, and it started working at full tilt because I must have 100 freaking videos. No offense, there was all kinds of good stuff over the last couple of days, but there's got to be 100 videos that are between, here we go, that are between the stories I was looking for and the stories that are there. All right. So a couple of the things I wanted to get back to, if they're not too lost here, and it looks like it might be. I don't know. We'll figure this out. It's early, people. Have a coffee. I'm only on sip like number 5 now. Actually, here's some good stuff we're going to talk about today, and then maybe we'll inch our way back. But it's something we haven't really talked about in a while. And that is the effects of social media, computer. We all have talked about brainwashing that the television does, not only just propaganda, but the frequencies, the light waves, the minute flashes per second that are happening to your eyes. I mean, we found out DARPA's been doing all kinds of research on how to use flashes of light to brainwash people. Don't think that they haven't been manipulating that stuff for a long time in the refresh rates of the stuff that we watch. But I saw a couple stories. There was a story that came out, this looks like February 16th, so a couple weeks ago, about mobile device use and the behavior of children. And I got to tell you, having a child is like running your own lab experiment. Because here's the thing. In the old days, we used to believe that we could, when we ran into a problem or didn't understand something with our kid, we could just run to a book or run to a specialist or, you know, dig up information that would give us all the answers. And now what we've been finding is that a lot of that information is skewed or paid or shilled or propagandized. And a lot of what we've been taught isn't true. I mean, just like every other corner of everything we've learned, it just isn't true, or it is biased. It is not in your best interest, or you weren't being told the whole truth. And after a while, it makes you extremely skeptical, which is what happened to me. I'm just a big skeptical pincushion right now. So I do a lot of reading, much to my detriment. It actually prevents me from sleeping lots at times between trying to do all the other things I do on a daily basis. You know, I still need to prepare for the show, and I need to pique my interest in something. I can't just talk about something that doesn't interest me. So one of the things, like I said, having a kid is like having a lab experiment going in your house, because there's no manual that comes with the kid. So you got to figure it out as you go along. And one of the things that I've noticed from very, very early on was the detrimental effect that even a small amount of television has on my kid. Like, she goes from a very attentive, creative, inventive, gregarious, social kid to being mean, selfish, nasty, argumentative. I mean, it's just amazing. It's amazing the change in personality that I have seen just with an hour or two. And it depends. Like, it definitely depends on what the television is. You know, we've picked a few shows that seem to not have too much of a side effect, to not cause that alter ego to appear. You know, another one of the traits that I've seen, and definitely with some of the kids' shows, is ADD behavior. like the not being able to pay attention or not being able to stick to one thing, not being able to follow through with working on one project to completion, moving on to something else and having 10 things going and nothing ever gets completed. I mean, I spent a lot of time studying psychology in college. That was, you know, I mean, that's what every college kid who doesn't know what they're going to go to college for decides that they're going for psychology. So this is my first thing. I was going for psychology, but I find the human brain extremely interesting. You know, I've talked about some of my weaknesses. I've mentioned them in chat before. I'm not going to mention them in public now, but definitely one of my weaknesses is the human brain and understanding how it ticks. So, you know, I've been paying very close attention, and especially when the end result of the lab experiment happens to be my sanity, and whether or not I keep it, I pay very close attention then and try to come up with a remedy. So I've dug deep into, I started getting into brainwashing for quite a while, and I think that that's something that we're going to spend at least a week on. I have a couple friends that have dug very, very deep into the brainwashing that I think I'm going to pick their brains. Maybe we can get a couple guests on and talk about different types of brainwashing, because there've been lots of experiments, there've been lots of alphabet agencies over the years that have been accused, and there have been programs that have been exposed by whistleblowers. So it's definitely not a fantasy, and I know that all this stuff sounds kooky when you first hear it, and trust me, I've been a skeptic for many years. I'm one of those argumentative people that never believes anything because somebody tells me. I always have to do it the hard way and figure it out for myself. Or, you know, I mean, there's a few people in my life that I finally started listening to, but I still will always do some double checking of facts and then start reading additionally on my own, which we all should be doing. Don't believe something because I tell you. Take something that I tell you, make some notes, and then when you get some free time, dig into it. Because like I said, when I spend time digging into something that I'm going to talk about, it's something that I have to find interesting. And if I find it interesting, I don't know, my likes are unusual. Let's just put it that way. I don't know. I have an enjoyment for the weird. That's kind of what fuels my hobbies, I'd say, is anything that's strange, different, and weird. Because every day, plain vanilla, the bullshit of just the hamster wheel just drives me batshit crazy. So it's got to be something that's strange, interesting, novel, or just plain weird. Anyway, everyone join me in a sip of coffee and let's read this interesting article that I found a couple weeks ago about mobile device use and the social behavior of children. A study published in the Journal of the American Academy of Pediatrics, which, you know, can we really trust them? Well, whatever. Let's listen to it and then draw some conclusions. Study published in the Journal of American Academy of Pediatrics suggests that the heavy use of mobile devices, such as smartphones or iPads, may affect a child's ability to learn self-control. Wow! You know what, guys? That's one of the big things. If I had to put a label on some of the big behaviors that I'm seeing form as my kid interacts more and more with a computer, is issues with self-control. Now, and I could guarantee you that's probably across the board with most kids. And if we take a look at the narcissistic society that has this instant gratification need, it all starts to make a little bit of sense. And, you know, add to that, too, maybe we'll find that story. We've mentioned it a few times, the one about Steve Jobs saying that he would never let his children play with an iPad. All right, let's get back to this article. Researchers with the Boston University School of Medicine warned that the impact of mobile devices on young brains is not currently known. The scientists are concerned with the devices becoming the predominant method for pacifying children and the effect it will have on their ability to develop self-regulation. Lead researcher Jen Radesky suggested parents increase, quote, direct human-to-human interaction, unquote. And hold on, because it's going to send me now to the source article. University Herald, I think. I'm not really sure where this publication is out of, but this is continuing about the study from the Journal of Pediatrics. All right. Children are using mobile devices more frequently at young ages, but the impacts of these gadgets is not on development and behavior of children is still relatively unknown. Researchers at Boston University Medical Center review many types of interactive media available today and raise important questions regarding their use as educational tools. And I'll tell you what, that's the one thing I was surprised about when I went to open house is the use of computers and programs that they're using during the day to teach these kids. I mean, excuse me, what the fuck is a teacher for? And I know teachers don't get paid like engineers do, but just like, you know, a doctor goes, at least ones that I've known, my good doctors went into medicine because they wanted to help people. Teachers go into teaching because they want to teach children and shape the next generation, not because it's going to give them a Ferrari in the end, okay? So why? And I know they're like, oh, but these teaching tools really help, you know, allow me to spend more one-on-one time with the other kids in the class. And maybe that's true. But on the other hand, maybe we should have some classroom assistants like you have in college, like a teaching assistant. Or why aren't we recording every single class that the teacher gives and saving that up to an intranet or an extranet that each child from that class has a login that they can access on a daily basis so the kids can go through and watch the lecture again on, you know, growing trees or on fractions or whatever. And if there's a snow day, if there's a pandemic that, you know, they're not, if there's a measles outbreak, if the kid has an accident or the kid has to have surgery, all that should be online. We should not have teachers during class hours, that small fraction of time that they're actually spending human interaction, with the ability to ask questions, with the ability to interact, and we're pushing them in front of a computer screen. You know, if anything, the computer program should be used as an additional tool for homework, maybe, where they can actually track the results of the kid and see maybe on an individualized basis then tomorrow where the kid had problems. And then that's where we direct the kid for his next day's busy work. Is let's, hey, Johnny, I saw you had problems dividing by 9 by your work last night. Let's work on 9s today. You know, I mean, I did education for many years in a technical adult perspective. And, you know, there are all different types of learners. And that's the one thing. And I've seen now on top of this anti-vac attack, now it's anti-homeschooler, anti-common core attack coming next, because anybody with any thoughts outside of the flashes with the flashes of light on our television tell us we should believe means that you have not had the Kool-Aid or enough of it yet. We are all targets. So get educated, because we need to start speaking up. You know, as I read more and more of this stuff, I'll tell you, anything that pisses me off is something I like to do my show on. Because when there's passion behind something, man, you just get into that zone. I think Gringo said that the other day. Sometimes, like, when I get off the air, I totally don't remember what I ranted about. It's because you're in the zone. You know, you get on a thought and get that train of thought with that type of energy behind it at a school board meeting, for example, or at one of your town board meetings. You know what I mean? And when you get people with passion behind something, they're not going to be able to shut you up, and especially when you back it with facts and studies. So, all right, that's enough of my rant about teachers and how poorly the school districts are doing at the moment and how cheaply. I mean, honestly, you could literally, with the technology and the freebie shit we have today, you could even set yourself up a private YouTube channel. You could have the homepage, but you can make the videos all private and then feed all those videos back to an RSS feed on a page with a login for the kids. It's not that fucking hard. A webcam, $29. You might even be able to buy a Chinese one for $10. On, you know, Alibaba or something. And there you go. kids all have computers at home or something. Most of them do anyway. So I just don't understand. And I mean, I was doing online education for 1,700 people back in 1997. Hey, we're talking, it's 2015. So where the hell is this shit? I don't know. Maybe that's where I'll go get my job. I'm going to go accost the school district. I'll go offer my services for hire. All right, here we go. Let's finish this story. So while there are many research studies that have found children younger than 30 months cannot learn from television and videos as well as they can from real life interactions, there are 30 months old. It's just horrible. I mean, you would think with a 2-year-old, you're going to be spending time. Don't stick them in front. I mean, I did. I let my kid watch Sesame Street that young, and she loved the Muppets. I don't know if that had any effect on her developmental abilities. She was very early in speaking, and she's got very good reading skills and math skills. So I don't attribute that, though, to Sesame Street at all. Anyway, let's get back to this. So while there's much research in saying that children younger than 30 months cannot learn from television and videos as well as they can from real life interactions, there are fewer studies investigating whether this is the case with interactive applications. Early research suggests that interactive media such as electronic books, and you're going to get a lot of that now for kids, and learning to read applications can be useful in teaching vocabulary and reading comprehension, but only in children preschool age or older. The potential educational benefits for children under 2 years old is questioned, as research is on interactive media in this age group. And it is well known that infants and toddlers learn best through hands-on and face-to-face experiences. This commentary notes that while mobile device use by children can provide an educational benefit, the use of these devices to distract children during mundane tasks may be detrimental to the social, emotional development of the child. The researchers ask, if these devices become the predominant method to calm and distract young children, will they be able to develop their own internal mechanisms of self-regulation? And I'll tell you what, one of the things that I found is that putting a kid in front of a TV or in front of a computer or in front of a mobile device actually makes them crave that digital interaction more. And I think one of the reasons why, and I've talked about this before, video games are another great example of this same sort of interaction. And I mean, I've talked about this way back when I was a tech and I worked for that large distributor. And we saw the very first SKU go into our system from the United States Army, and it was a video game. And we were like, wow, how cool is that? And it was a first-person shooter, and it was, and I mean, this was a couple years ago already, but at the time, it was exactly 18 years later that they were recruiting drone pilots to fly drones in remote locations. And I was like, holy shit. We raised an eyebrow that day that we saw that game. We were like, why is the military skewing video games? And sure than shit, here we are. We made a drone army to sit and play their drone video games while bombing Al-Qaeda and now ISIS and all kinds of other brown people, Taliban, people who aren't doing much of anything. And one of the things that they found through years of studies with video games is that the human response to video games is quite interesting. It produces adrenaline. It produces dopamine. It produces serotonin. It produces lots of those chemicals. And I have to go through, actually, one day I went through and did some pretty deep research on the brain chemicals that are produced and different interactions that cause different brain chemicals to be produced. And those same brain chemicals that a video game entices are the same brain chemicals that are produced when You experience a sense of accomplishment. Because here's one of the, I use myself as a big psychology experiment, 47 years worth, and I love using myself as an experiment because, I mean, what better proof can you have? I mean, you know how you feel. You know every bit about yourself. So when there are changes, you know immediately, and you know what your interactions were. There's no questioning or hearsay. And so I think that personal experimentation is a very, it's a verifying way to look at other studies. And I'll tell you, when I spend a lot of time dedicated to a project, let's say, even though it's so painful, and I mean, it requires me lack of sleep and lack of life and lack of anything. But the thing is that dangling carrot, and we've been trained to follow dangling carrots, and that's why we work. That's why we're tied to the system, because there's that dangling carrot of that paycheck every week. There's that dangling carrot of moving forward, moving up the food chain. There's Bernays trained us to follow the dangling carrot to keep up or be better than the Joneses. That's the dangling carrot of the disposable society. Get a new one, throw it away. Get a new one, throw it away. The dangling carrot of instant gratification. That's where it all comes from. So to be able to manipulate those brain chemicals that cause you to want that dangling carrot, because guess what? Those same chemicals and that same part of the brain that's involved in all those different interactions is the same part of the brain that's involved in addiction. Yes, I said it, addiction. Addictions such as cocaine addiction, or most recently learned addiction such as high fructose corn syrup. Yes, high fructose corn syrup, which is why Coca-Cola and things of that nature are like crack. Once you finally break that sugar high, that sugar dopamine euphoria that you get, you feel a lot differently. And it's not like you're Jonesing, but I'll tell you what, I was off of soda for years on end, and wow, did I feel good. And then at the holidays, I had a couple, and I got to tell you, I got a taste for it now. It definitely is addictive, and it's so bad for you. That stuff is so bad for you. You have to, I don't know if it's as bad as quitting smoking, let's say, but it absolutely, and it's in all of our foods, it's in all the processed foods. It's even in ketchup. Did you know that? High fructose corn syrup's in ketchup. And what gets even worse about high fructose corn syrup is that it uses genetically modified corn. And we're going to make another right turn here. I don't know if we're going to get to it today, but I definitely want to get back in because I relocated all those articles that I've had skewed up here for the Nanotech and Food Day. We did one day, but it's time to dedicate some more. We're going to dig a little bit deeper too into the GMO and Dr. Huber with this his newest glyphosate connections to different things in the ecosystem. So, all right. Anyway, let's back up. So we have this whole sociological, pathological, biological interaction that is going on when we interact with things such as video games or things such as computers, iPads, with things in our environment like high fructose corn syrup that is difficult to stay away from, televisions. And it's almost like an addiction. And I'm going to call it an addiction. I mean, people who are indoctrinated, any of your friends or family out there that you haven't been able to break through to, ones that point at you like Donald Sutherland at the end of Invasion of the Body Snatchers, where they're playing Amazing Grace on the bagpipes and he's standing on the wharf. Those types of people. When you're at their houses or at an event or something with them, turn on the TV and see what they do. They can't take their eyes off of it. Nor can they pay attention to you 100% when you're trying to explain something to them. It's absolutely amazing. They do the blank, yeah, and they look over your shoulder, and you know that they're not fully listening to you. The other ear is listening to Snoogie, whoever her name is, Kim Kardashian, wiggle her butt at the screen. All big fucking distractions from the real thing that's going on. And I'm telling you, there the propaganda is so bullshit thick right now that there's no chiseling through it. It's so deep. And it's so dangle by the carrot distracting that these people that have been conditioned, they've been conditioned to react like a Pavlovian dog to this stuff, that they can't see through it. They need to have trauma. They need to have some big thing that completely kicks the cornerstone out from their belief system or out from their daily routine, out from their life. They need to lose a job, or someone needs to die, or there needs to be a massive collapse somewhere that affects them directly. And that's when the veil falls. And it's a very, very, very sad, unfortunate fact that it takes that extreme to wake these people up. But if you go back into, and you know what I was saying about education, I have the stool here for my feet and it keeps moving. I mean, the educational system is all part of this. You know, there was that, and I think we've played him here before. I don't remember his name, some good Russian or Czechoslovakian name. He was a KGB agent and he talks about enslaving a society and how to use the educational system. Within a couple generations, you've completely brainwashed a society. And they have absolutely incorporated many of those ideas into the United States. And if you look at our educational system and the way they have stunted free thinking, all these standardized testing. And I'm going to tell you this common core bullshit. If I ask at my school, I asked a simple question, are they replacing Regents with Common Core? Because a Regents education was the standardized teaching that they did in New York State. We had a test that we took every June that was in grade. You know, I don't know, probably started in fifth or sixth grade, maybe all the way through my senior year. We had the testing. We took it in June, and there was a makeup for the people who missed it in January, or people who were getting out half a year, or people who were making up from the year before. They also had a test in January. And when you got a Regents education, it was like the stamp of approval. You met the standards for the state education system. But the thing is that New York State education, comparatively at the time to the rest of the nation, was actually very high. And our taxes, you know, we always bitch and complain about how high the freaking taxes are in New York. But back in those days, a lot of our tax dollars actually went into the education system. And I know we bitch about Cuomo. I can't stand this asshole. But his dad, and I know there's all kinds of stories about him having family members that were in the mob and whatever. And you know what? I definitely wouldn't doubt it. If you remember Mario, go find some video of Mario and just listen to him talk, and that would be your first thoughts. But one thing that he was very, very adamant about at the time, and it was something that I cared about dearly, was the New York State in-state tuition and keeping it low, and college education at a world-class university being available for anyone who wanted to go. I was a college student at the time, and my college tuition back in those days was $675 a semester. And I was able to finance my entire education waiting tables. I had to work two, three jobs at different times in my life, but I was able to pay for my own school with only $4,000 left over in loans when it was all said and done. That's not too shabby. So back in those days, they definitely were dumping money. We had our lotto. I remember when that first started, and they were dumping money back in those days into the educational system as well. I don't see any of that happening anymore. And I see this Common Core is bringing us all down to a new level of low, of dumbness, of unquestioning, complete drone zone bot Do what you're told. Eat lots of sugary foods. Let's through the school food program do experimentation on this, you know, on these children by putting government cheese in the school and see what happens with our BGH in the Monsanto growth hormone shot in the cows. You know, it's really mutated. And they've taken New York State's education as well as every other state and brought it down to some lowly level that somehow, some way, yes, Billy Gates seemed to have his hands in. I really don't understand what his full interaction is because I have not had time to look into it. But I know that Bill Gates was involved. Homework project. One of these days, too, what I want to do. So get ready, start marking your calendars. There's all these homework projects I've handed out. We're going to start doing call-in days where people who did homework projects and the things we talked about can come in and talk about their findings. I think that would be fun. All right, anyway, let's get back to this one story I've been working through for the last 37 minutes. Anyway, they say that educational benefits for children under 2 years old is absolutely questioned. This commentary notes that while mobile device use by children can provide educational benefit, the use of these devices to distract children during mundane tasks may be detrimental to the social development of the child. Will they be able to develop their own internal mechanisms for self-regulation? It has been well studied that increased television time decreases a child's development of language and social skills. Well, absolutely. Mobile media use similarly replaces the amount of time spent engaging in direct human-to-human interaction. And we've seen just with like this next generation coming up, the teenagers who communicate with their friends as they're sitting next to each other through instant messaging and the blossoming of emoticons and chat lingo and the oh, what's it called? I don't know what that dictionary is called. I don't remember the name of it, but you know the Urban Dictionary and words that are completely off the hook or terms that are, you know, not academically correct becoming mainstream. These people have a whole different language and way of spelling. And what was that other language that we just saw? Didn't we see something not too long ago that they had this other language because English was so difficult for kids to learn that they had this other language to teach kids how to spell English, but it was like dumbed down, ridiculously weird. I don't know. This lack of communication, and I mean, even look at the lack of teaching of cursive in a lot of school programs. I found out from my kids' school that actually they didn't teach cursive last year to the kids. And this year they brought it back to third grade. So how interesting is that? I mean, even here. And here's my take on it. I told my kid, they wrote the Constitution in cursive. So regardless if they teach it to you or not, I'm going to teach it to you because not only is cursive a creative way of expression and being, you know, an English student, I went to college for English. I did tons of writing and tons of research papers, and I hand wrote all mine back in those days. You know, when you write, there is this extra connection that happens, this imprintation, if that's even a word, on your brain to be able to remember things. You know, I had this ability when I studied something, if I wrote it down, I could like flash freeze frame on exactly what I wrote during the test. Like, I could literally, I remember when I first realized what I was able to do, and I almost felt like I was cheating because I could literally read the page of the content that I wrote on the page in my head during the test. And I think it causes an extra level of imprint, of learning. It's a deeper level of learning in the brain. And as we've offloaded this, like when I've tried to write things. You know, I mean, in the corporate world, I did many, many years of business plans and proposals and technical documentation. I wrote my entire training manual for my 6-week class that I did for new hires when I was doing the technical training. You know, I used to do all the tests. I used to do all the fact knowledge nugget, fact pages on different products and stuff. You know, and that all, I did all the marketing. Jesus, I forgot about that. Like my last 10 years of work. I mean, all the marketing spins for a corporation, you got to know ways, and all the web content, you know, you got to know how to write, how to use words, how to express thought. And when you can't do that anymore, you lose your ability to not only communicate, but to express complicated thoughts. You get simplified, dumbed down. And that's where we start, you know, around, instead of talking about the dynamics of what's going on in the Middle East, let's say, and all the U.S. involvement in launching our own now terroristic threats against ourselves, problem, reaction, solution, they're actually talking about Kim Kardashian at the water cooler. I mean, it is a full dumbing down of society. All right. Here, I need to get back here because we're going to run out of time and I won't even finish this one story. All right. So they've determined that television time decreases a child's development of language and social skills. Oh, I know what I was going to say. One last thought on that. So I found, once I moved from paper to a digital world for my writing, that it was much, 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 much more difficult, at least in the beginning, for me to take the creativity that I had in a paper world and to have that same creativity and that same ability to have long-term memory, let's say, of something that I did when I did it manually. And it still holds true. That I think the digital world, it took us to a lesser level of human experience and human education and human deep thought. I still, one of my biggest, I would say a crutch still to that world is my system with index cards. I have containers and containers of index cards, of notes, of little blurbs, of websites, of links, of, I still write stuff down. I slide them all under my keyboard, under my monitor, in little containers. And if I ever need to find something that I don't quite remember, I know it's there. And it's still a requirement for me. But I got to say, I think that manual pen to paper is something that eventually they want to remove. That's why we're moving now, like we found in that very first story, moving kids to a digital realm. And it's planned. This, it has an effect on our ability to think, our ability to reason, our ability to remember. Add in all these other things. And it's probably some way that they discovered, this would be my educated opinion, it's probably a way for them to make memories disappear easier when they do their DARPA research flashes of light to make you forget. Like via TV, like via monitor, via mobile device. Okay. The author also questions whether heavy device use during young childhood could interfere with the development of, and where have we heard these before, empathy, social and problem-solving skills that are typically obtained by exploring unconstructed play or unstructured play in interacting with peers. Now, this weekend, Michael Cross on Unlock the Door did another show on psychopaths. And one of the things that we've been discovering in our research here over the last couple of years is that there has been this engineering of society to produce a large number of people with psychopathic traits, narcissistic traits, lack of empathy, instant gratification, center of the universe. And it's all goes back to Bernays and to the social engineering, this disconnecting us from nature and each other that makes us easier to control and manipulate. It's all the same thing. Who wants to live in a world full of psychopaths? Ones that are living for the world of Epicurus, you know? The ones that live for the world of self-satisfaction. That's what it's all about, and I want it now, and I'm going to have a temper tantrum and stomp my feet. And as long as you give it to me and I'm fat, I'm dumb, and I'm happy, I'm satiated. You've boosted my dopamine levels and my adrenaline levels, and I'm an addict, and I love that feeling. And I can get it in this fake reality that they've created for us, this online world. And the shit that's going on in the outside world doesn't matter, because you know what? Damn it, it's depressing. You know what? Damn it, it's so depressing that I'm going to take my SSRIs so it doesn't bother me anymore and find myself a happy place in the pretend world that they've created for me. I mean, do you guys see how perfectly this all fits together? Like, when I can't understand how family and friends don't get the television thing, don't get how it's this false, manufactured world that the last, how many generations since the 50s? Is that when we first had like real broadcast TV? Was maybe the early 50s? And that was shortly after the war, right? World War II, I believe. And they propagandized everyone and they got us to start buying. And they took all those women who were out there and started marketing cigarettes. And I think that might have been World War I even. I don't know. We'd have to look. I'm not sure the dates on that. But TV has been used as a manipulation tool and a propaganda tool for a very long time. Anyway, so it's just moved now into the 21st century with all these other technologies. And eventually it's going to be your brain implants. I mean, they've gotten to that point now where we are so addicted to the machine that augmentation, like they've been discussing, augmentation of reality, augmentation of our brains, augmentation of our memory will be a very easy next step. And the open arms of accepting this technology, I have a really bad feeling that we are the minority in people seeing that this stuff is bad. You know, that friend of mine that we disagree on everything. I mean, literally, like, we see the worlds from just two completely as opposite can get views. But I listen because they have as much knowledge from the alter perspective as I do about mine. And so it makes for a maddening yet very interesting conversation. And we had a discussion for once that was civil in regards to DARPA, brain technologies, implants, prosthetics, mind control, robotics. We went at it for quite a while a few days ago, and every statement I had, there was a contrary argument to that, and I had to address those. I mean, it was like a full all-out friendly debate, let's say. An unusually friendly debate for that topic, because that topic typically gets hot because it's a red button with me. And I gotta tell you, when I take my foot, one foot, because there's 2 feet in this, one is the technology end and then the other end is the people who control the technology. And when I took my one foot out of my left shoe, the control shoe, the people who control the technology, and just looked at the technology itself, and looked at the perspective of the poor souls who this technology is being tested on, the desperate, the dying, the very sick, the damaged from war, the The ill, the victims, the people who have been victims of all the stuff that's been going on, the ones who have no other choice except to live with it or be offered this glowing bowl of promise that if they take the chip, they'll be saved. They can see again. They'll have an arm again. They can walk again. Their genetic disease will be cured. I mean, that's the promise of this RNAi. Your cancer will be gone. That's what I always said. They were going to offer us the cure for cancer. When I get rid of the motivations of the people that are making these breakthroughs, and I'm not going to say it's all the people, because not, here's the, one of the questions that came to me in that conversation. Do you think every scientist out there, every engineer that's working on this stuff, every physicist is an evil mastermind? No, they're not. And that's the horrible part about this. These people have a passion. Like you said, anything that you're passionate about, you're going to do great things. These people have a passion and they believe that they are trying to save humanity, and they're doing this for the betterment of these people who have no other choice. They're really looking to try to extend life and to make the quality of life better for others. But like Einstein, discovering how to smash the atom, and he had a bad feeling that they were going to do bad things with his discovery. And so I, when our debate ended, and here's the end result of that. I am not anti-technology because I have been in this world for 20 years, 25 years professionally. I lived, eat, ate, and breathed it. I was a sci-fi junkie my entire childhood. I saw the promise. But what I wasn't expecting and what I was naive about until just probably, I mean, 20 years ago, I saw it only as the United States government in regards to hiding things about maybe us being visited. They were evil. These people were hiding something that maybe us being visited by other entities could help save the world. And that's why they didn't want us to know about it. But I didn't know about how grand, and honestly, I mean, I don't even deal with that stuff anymore. Now they're saying that maybe we're being visited from other dimensions, and it's from a phys.org story that it came out that they think it's scientifically possible. So maybe we could talk about that tomorrow. I don't know. But anyway, so I mean, I'm not thinking that that shit's all fantasy. I just don't have time to think about that stuff anymore because the conspiracy got so huge. And then to learn that we've been developing this entire generation or two of psychopaths. I mean, like literally, we created these people with the technology, with the TVs, with the iPads, with the cell phones, with the instant gratification, with the consumerism, with the reality TV. We've literally made entire generations of psychopaths. Ones that only think about themselves, that have a lack of empathy, that don't care about the planet, that want it immediately, that'll do anything to get what they want, that are addicted to the system, to the food, to the sex. They've tapped into that reptilian brain, to those seven deadly sins that Chaucer always talked about. The lust, lasciviousness, envy, greed. They're all there now. And those are all those behaviors that access that part of the brain that produce all those great brain chemicals that you could easily get from just some hard work, some sex, or from some accomplishment. That's how we used to do it in the old days. And it wasn't very manipulated. You could actually make your own brain chemicals by doing something good. All right, we got about 2 minutes here before the music starts to play, so let's see if we can get through the end of the story. The authors question whether heavy device use during young childhood could interfere with the development of empathy, social, and problem-solving skills that are typically obtained by exploring unstructured play and interacting with peers. These devices may also replace the hands-on activities important for the development of sensory motor and visual motor skills, which are important for the learning and applications of math and science. Hey, remember the hard shit? And when it gets too hard to understand, then we ignore it. Like nanotechnology and all this crazy shit that's going on with GMOs and vaccines. Most people aren't paying attention to the real technology behind it because it's too fucking hard to understand. Like I said yesterday, the ones in knowledge are the ones in power. While much remains unknown, the authors recommend that parents try to teach application before allowing their children to access it. They also may encourage parents to use these applications with their children as an interactive media together, enhancing its educational value. All right. They don't know what the end result is going to be on our children. Like I said, Steve Jobs had said that he would not let his children use the iPad. I don't know if he ever said why, but he definitely saw that it brought them out of the world of the real and took them to the world of the imaginary, to where it isn't good for childhood development. I mean, it really isn't. All right, guys, it is Tuesday. Tuesday means awesome radio at UCY, just like every day. But Tuesday has Mr. Kevin Blanche up next, so there's somebody live following me. Make sure you stick around. Chuck Ocelli is live at 6 p.m. tonight. We have Prepper Chicks After Dark Primer Time with Michael and Nick. And then Anti-Media Radio with S.M. Gibson and Diedrich Young at 11. It's always a fun night on Tuesdays. So, all right, guys, try and stay warm. Hopefully we start melting slowly. We don't want any massive flooding. Let's do a little digging. People let me know in chat who wants to come on and do a research project update one of these days, and I will make a day. All right, guys, everyone have an awesome Tuesday. We will catch up with you tomorrow. Take care.